sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The show you're about to hear originally aired in July of 2018, but I'm replaying it now because it's a new book that I think all Americans should read. If you think that our presidents and our Congress are calling the shots, think again. The book discussed in this show reveals who the real puppet masters are. So let's begin with this show about the new book, Giants, the Global Power Elite. We're going to start the show today with some good news. Professor Peter Phillips has a new book out called Giants, the Global Power Elite, which will be released in August of 2018. This is what Mark Crispin Miller, a professor of media at NYU, has to say about the book. Peter Phillips thoroughly identifies the members of the transnational capitalist class that largely runs the world today through the mammoth instruments of Western military force and the international intelligence community, and not least, our free press. So there's a new global elite at the controls of our economic future, and here, former Project Censor director and media monitoring sociologist Peter Phillips unveils for the general reader just who these players are. The book includes such power players as Larry Fink, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Jamie Dimon, and Warren Buffett. And Peter Phillips names names in the book. And at the end of the book, he includes a letter to the 389 global power elites that he's named in the book. So on today's show, you're going to hear Peter Phillips, a former Project Censor director and media monitoring sociologist and professor, discuss this new book. The speech was given in March of 2018 at a conference as part of the Sonoma State University's fourth annual Social Justice Week, and it was partially sponsored by Project Censored. This video was recorded by Dennis Murphy of Petaluma Community Access. So here he is, Peter Phillips.
Okay, good afternoon. I'm Peter Phillips from the Sociology Department here at Sonoma State, and I'm going to talk about the global power elite, the giants of capitalism. And there's a picture that you all have a copy of, and this is the Diego Rivera mural, which now resides in Mexico City, but this is the second copy of it. This mural was first done at the Rockefeller Center in 1934 by Diego Rivera, and Rockefeller didn't like it that he had certain figures in there and destroyed the entire mural. The mural is called the Man of the Universe, and it seemed appropriate that one, the Rockefellers had destroyed it, and two, that it's, you know, about a very powerful person. And so that's going to be on the picture of my Global Power Elite book, which will be out in August from Seven Stories Press. Part of the conversation today, too, is about the transnational capitalist class. Estimates are that the world's wealth is about $255 trillion, and with U.S. and Europe holding about two-thirds of that total. Meanwhile, 80% of the people in the world live on less than $10 a day. And the poorest half of the population lives on $2.50 a day. And 1.3 billion people live on $1.25 a day. So there's massive inequality, and 80% of the world is very poor. The LA Times reports this year that one out of nine people go to bed hungry every night. That's 795 million people on the planet who suffer from chronic hunger, and they're forecasting that 2 billion people will be lacking food by 2050. In addition, one out of three people suffer from some form of malnutrition, which means they lack sufficient vitamins and minerals in their diet to lead to health issues such as stunted growth in children. Each year, poor nutrition kills 3.1 million children under the age of five. 25,000 people a day, or 9 million a year, die from starvation and malnutrition. This slaughter occurs every day. That's the equivalent of 10 9/11 events every day in the world. Yet we have more than enough people to food to feed everybody. It's not a lack of food, it's a lack of distribution. A quarter of all the food in grocery stores is thrown away. Humanity is divided into the 1%, the upper 1%, and particularly the upper 1,000th of 1%, several thousand people in the very elite group. 20%, which have jobs and incomes and are often described as middle-class working people, professionals. And the 80% where wealth really doesn't exist at all. The transnational capital elite takes pride in pointing out that they have the largest middle class ever, but that's the 20%, but that doesn't extend down into the rest of the world, and they are getting poorer every day. Oxfam International reported in January of 2016 that only 62 people hold as much wealth as half the world. A year later, that was down to 8 people. So at the beginning of 2017, 8 people controlled more wealth than half the world. And wealth concentration is happening so massively that someday it's very feasible that one person will hold more wealth than half the humans in the world. The top billionaires, Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, who's now 100 million the number one leader in the world, Amancio Ortega from Spain, William Buffett from Berkshire Hathaway, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, Carlos Slim from Telecom in Mexico. Those are the multi-billionaires at 50 billion plus. Forbes lists 2,047 billionaires for 2017. These global capitalist elites are fully aware of their vast inequalities and their rapidly growing concentration of wealth. The billionaires are similar to colonial plantation owners. They know they are a small minority with vast resources and power, yet they must continually worry about the unruly exploited masses rising in rebellion. Understanding how power and inequality is sustained can perhaps give us opportunities for democracy and equality in today's world. Now, there's a long tradition of sociological research that documents the existence of a dominant ruling class in the United States. Elites set policy, determine national political priorities. The American upper class is complex and competitive. It perpetuates itself through interacting families of high social standing with similar lifestyles, corporate affiliations, membership in elite clubs, and private schools. The American ruling class has also long been determined to be mostly self-perpetuating, maintaining its influence through policymaking institutions such as the National Association of Manufacturers, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Business Council, the Business Roundtable, the Conference Board, the American Enterprise Institute, Council of Foreign Relations, and a number of other policy groups that are U.S.-oriented. These associations have long dominated policy decisions in the U.S. government. In 1956, C. Wright Mills wrote his book called The Power Elite, which was how World War II solidified a trinity of power in the United States that comprised corporate, military, and government elites in a centralized power structure motivated by class interests and working in unison through higher circles of contact and agreement. Mills described how power elites were those who, quote, decide whatever is decided of major consequence. In the past few decades, especially since 9/11, the policy of the elites have been mostly united in support of American empire military power that maintains a repressive war against resisting groups, typically labeled terrorists, around the world. This war on terror is much more about protecting transnational globalization and capital, dollar hegemony, access to oil, than it is about repressing terrorism or protecting us. The U.S. has a long history of interventions around the globe for the purpose of protecting our national interests. Increasingly, NATO is a partner with the U.S. in this global dominance agenda, reflecting increasing transnational economic natures of our interests. Now, when we say national interests, I think it's important to kind of specify what does that mean. Robert Blackwell, who is a Kissinger senior fellow at the Council of Foreign Relations and national security advisor to George Bush, clearly stated in an article in January of 2017, telling President Trump the importance of defending the U.S. interests. He wrote, in addition to protecting the U.S. from nuclear threats, Blackwell called for ensuring the viability and stability of major global systems, trade, financial markets, supplies of energies, and climate. He said, we must maintain a regional and global balance of power that promotes peace and stability through domestic American robustness, an international policy of primacy in supporting and defending the U.S. alliances, particularly with Israel. Now, so he's saying, we're here to protect business. That's what it's about. The Heritage Foundation has an annual index called Military Strength, and it describes U.S. vital interests as defense of the homeland, successful conclusion of major wars or destabilize a region of critical interest to the U.S., and the preservation of movement within the global commons, the sea, air, and other space domains through which the world conducts business. So the empire, the American empire, and the NATO empire are about protecting business worldwide. Peter Dale Scott writes in his book, The American Deep State, he describes the importance of Wall Street as the overworld that offers intelligence agencies and personnel around the world policies and direction. The U.S. has long been the protector of global capitalism, especially since World War II. We have over 800 bases in 70 countries and territories. The UK and France and Russia collectively have only 30 bases that are foreign. The U.S. is now deployed in 70% of the nations in the world. And the Special Operations Command has troops in 147 countries, an 80% increase since 2010. U.S. Special Forces are currently engaged in 100 missions in Africa. Most of these missions are training exercises, but direct action counterterrorism strikes happen regularly, including drone assassination and kill and capture raids. Capital power elites exist around the world. The globalization of trade and capital brings the world elites into increasingly interconnected relationships, to the point that scholars for the past few decades have begun to talk about the development of a transnational capitalist class. One of the earliest works on this topic is the book, The Transnational Capitalist Class, by author Leslie Sklar, economist in London, argued that globalization has elevated transnational corporations to more influential international roles, with the result of nation states being less significant than international agreements developed through the World Trade Organization and other international institutions. Emerging from these multinational corporations is a transnational capitalist class whose loyalties and interests are still rooted in their corporations but are increasingly international in scope. Now, deep inside the transnational class is what David Rothkopf calls in his book, The Superclass, the global power elite in the world they are making. He is the one that talks about the 1,000th of 1%, the 6,000 to 7,000 people who the Davos attending, private jet flying, mega corporation interlocked, policy planning elites of the world, people at the absolute peak of the global power pyramid. They are predominantly white, mostly from North America and Europe, and they are the ones that set the agendas in the G20, the G7, NATO, the World Bank, and the WTO, World Trade Organization. Now, in our research, we identify the people on the boards of directors of the top 17 asset management firms of the world. These firms have an in excess of $1 trillion in management. These 17 firms collectively have 199 directors on their boards. We think that this group of 199 individuals represents the financial core of the world's transnational capitalist class. Now, if you look at the chart on the back of the picture I gave you, that's the back of the cover image. There's a chart there that shows you what we call the giants. When I say giants, these are the corporations that managed in excess of $1 trillion in 2017. So many of them are far in excess. They're $4 trillion, $5 trillion, $4 trillion, $3 trillion. And the total for those 17 firms is $41.1 trillion. they're only managed by 199 people, so a room twice their size, they could all fit in and have cocktails. It's not very many. And what's interesting about these, they're the Western governments and policy boards work in the interest of this financial core to protect the free flow of capital investment anywhere in the world and the continuing returns needed for capital growth. The financial core of the transnational class are the directors of banks and the asset firms that control this $41 trillion. In addition, they also serve many other smaller asset management firms, adding traditional trillions of dollars and more. So if you look at the chart I gave you, it shows you the one with all the squiggly lines, the global giants corporations. Those are the 17, and they control $41 trillion, and they're all invested in each other. So the $41 trillion, $403 billion, is invested in each other. So they're all collectively invested in that this $40 trillion becomes one large, super connected global capital structure managed by less than 200 people. And that's the power of elites today. Now, if you look at the backside of that chart, you'll see that the $17 trillion companies, there's three more new giants that by 2018 have been added into the trillionaires. And then there's nine near giants who are all in excess of $800 billion. So if you put those all together, we're talking about 30 big companies that control in excess of $50 trillion worth of wealth. So we're starting to talk about a quarter of all the wealth in the world concentrated in one place. Now, if you try to think about $1 trillion, I mean, it's really kind of an amazing thing to even think about. The entire U.S. military empire and NATO together, all the bases around the world, all the military wars and things we're doing, does not exceed $1 trillion. So when you talk about 50 times that, managed by just a few hundred people, it's a massive amount of very solid consolidated wealth that every government institution, every president of European countries, all the intelligence agencies want to protect. That's what American capitalism is about, is protecting that wealth. The top asset firms tend to invest in each other. JP Morgan, Chase, and BlackRock, they have this $403 billion invested collectively in each other. The Interlock Capital is likely much higher. It's probably closer to $2 to $3 trillion, because that $400 billion that we've discovered was only about 25% that NASDAQ publicly lists in terms of co-investments. So 75% of these investments are held privately, and we don't know where they are. So there are many hundreds of transnational capitalist people inside the global empire of capital, but these are the 199 that are the most part of the financial core. They manage the top 17 firms. They have similar backgrounds and similar training. The 136 of them, they're all degreed. 59 have MBAs or PhDs. Almost all attended elite colleges, 28 attended Harvard and Stanford. The people from the 20 nations are made up the financial core. 60% are from the US, 23 are from Britain and France each, 13 from Germany and Switzerland each, then 3 from Italy, Singapore, India, Austria, 2 from Japan and Brazil, and then 1 each from Netherlands, South Africa, Zambia, Kuwait, Belgium, Canada, Mexico, Colombia. So it's international. And they all operate in the big cities like New York, Chicago, London, Paris, Munich, or went to college there, Tokyo, Singapore. The members of the financial core take active part in global policy groups. Financial core serve on as advisors to the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, the International Bank of Settlements, the Federal Reserve Board, the G7, and the G20. Most attend the World Economic Forum in Davos. Many of the 199 have been keynote speakers there. So the World Economic Forum has been getting more attention. Newspapers will say when it's happening. It's not a policy-making body. It's in Davos, Switzerland, January of every year. 2,000 or 3,000 people go. It's up at 5,000-foot elevation. They pay. This year, I heard it was 50,000. It used to be 25,000. And the top 1,000 corporations in the world are invited to send people. And they can send as many as 5, as long as one is a woman. So that's how they keep a little gender balance there. But it's not a formal policy-making group. There's an educational consensus function, where these thousands of elites in the world, 3,000 attended in 2017, they're getting to hear from top investors and top policy people in the world. The president of China was there last year. And didn't Trump go this year? I think he did. And so it's very enlightenment. And, you know, a lot of feeling of, boy, I'm really special because I'm here. I'm in Davos. Kind of the same thing I saw at the Bohemian Grove, where the 2,000 plus men meet every year. And it's just all men there. They don't even have a quota for women. But they don't make policy either. They just get together, applaud each other, hear talks and speeches, and feel good about it all. Transnational elites interact as a class of people. They know each other often personally. They do business together. And they either know each other personally or know of each other. They have similar educational and lifestyle backgrounds. They share common global interests. They meet in non-governmental policy organizations and form new ones as needs arise to privately make decisions for global governance institutions to implement. Transnational elites hold a common ideology of being the engineers of global capitalism, a firm belief that their way of life and continuing global capital is best for all humankind. The transnational capitalist class represents the interest of several hundred thousand millionaires and billionaires who comprise the richest people in the top 1% of the world's hierarchy. So you may be a multimillionaire, but most of your money you've allowed a management investment firm to hold for you and give you anywhere from a 3 to 10% return. And if you have some that's risky, you may go with a venture capitalist company in the hopes of getting better than a 10% return. Ironically, this extreme accumulation of concentrated capital creates a continuing problem for investors. They have to scour the world for new investment opportunities that will not yield adequate return, that will yield adequate returns on capital. So they got more capital, they got places to invest it in with a positive return. So the concentration of wealth and power at this level tends to overaccumulate in the hands of increasingly fewer elites to the point that capital has limited safe investment opportunities. There's three mechanisms for investing this excess capital. One, they'll do risky financial speculations like the subprime mortgage loans, which almost collapsed the entire system in 2008. They will continually buy up public institutions and try to privatize everything, electric companies, water, roads, schools. I'm waiting for churches to become privatized. Well, in some ways they are. So everything that's part of the public domain, everything in the culture is for sale. And the other big area where capital is used up is the preparation for war and the acting and wars. So wars, they spend huge amounts of money investing in war machines, war protection, armies, and then they blow things up that have to be reinvested and protected. It's a very great profitable way to use capital. So Western governments and international policy bodies serve the interest of the transnational capital class, capital concentrations. Wars are initiated to protect their interests. Uncooperative regimes are undermined and overthrown in support of the free flow of global capital for investment anywhere the returns are possible. So we've seen regime changes and attempted regime changes in Libya, Iraq, Syria, Venezuela, Yemen, Afghanistan, the Balkans are all examples of wars to support international capital penetration of the region. There were some blockages before by dictators or government blockages, and that they're seeking to undermine that. And they're seeking very hard to dismantle the democratically elected countries in Venezuela and Cuba, for that matter. And earmarking and surrounding militarily China and Russia. Now, the Chinese have some 80 billionaires, and they are invested in this market, and they are part of the policy planning thing, but they still maintain separate military and nationalistic orientations that the power elite don't like very much. So while millions suffer, the power elites, the financials, they focus on seeking returns in the trillions of dollars, and they'll do this on speculating everything, like food and land. So, and they'll cooperate with each other to control and entrap, and this controls and traps cycles of economic growth with continuing mass humanitarian consequences. So if they're investing in bulk foods, the commodities market, and the prices are going up, for somebody living on $2 a day and the price of whatever commodity they're eating, rice, potatoes, whatever, goes up, that leads to the continuing starvation of tens of thousands of people every day. So war and preparation for war is a major return use of excess capital. For the U.S., that amounts to $600 billion in 2017. It's higher this year. China is $215 billion, Russia $69 billion, but Saudi Arabia, U.K., India, France, Japan, Germany are all in the $40, $50 billion range. South Korea, Italy, Australia, Brazil, Israel are all in the $20 to $30 billion range. So Dwight Eisenhower said in 1953, every gun that's made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who are hungry and are not fed, and those who are cold and not clothed.
And again, you were just listening to Peter Phillips discussing his new book, Giant, the Global Power Elite, coming out in August of 2018. You can pre-order a copy at the website projectcensored.org. And again, that's projectcensored.org. And tune in next week to hear the second and final part of this speech. And just a reminder that my shows are archived at the website radioforall.net. And that's the digit four. So radioforall.net. And once on the site, click on Contributors, and then look for Cheryl with a C. And then if you click on my name, the show should pop up in chronological order. And today's show should be up there in a few days. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people.